I'm Josh, and Lorraine, you're my density. I'm wow. sorry, George, but you're just a dead fuck.
amazing. Hey, I'm Matt, and spoilers, but one of the movies we will talk about this week has a couple of kids that I think are just playing Statler and Waldorf. So I think part six here might be an unofficial Muppet sequel.
That was the goddamnedest thing. That's one of the many things that
fucking
like
insane?
Rewatching it, you're like, what is happening with these two curmudgeonly 8-year-olds or 10-year-olds or whatever? It's like,
three times while watching that movie, I wrote, this is just a comedy. They're making a comedy and then are obligated to have death. But they think they're just making a shitty 80s comedy that you'd see on Comedy Central at like 2 p.m. on a Saturday in the 90s.
Ugh. So odd.
Oh, we're still in the intro.
Let's see. I'll combine two of them then. This is Charlie Dunn and Austin. Two quick things. First, there's positively no handball playing in the hallway. And this is apropos of nothing, some folks have a strange idea of entertainment.
And we are fart heads, one and all, on our show Hot Dog. We watched a short this week called Avoid Asking, or Evita Preguntando, which I very much enjoy. In Spanish, preguntar means to ask and to answer, kind of. So you would say, ¿puede preguntarme un pregunto? Which is like, can I question you a question? And like, sure, I can question your answer, and I can answer your question.
Wacky, I feel like you'd have Spanish. A lot more like, I don't know, they've been playing word games with me. were they cheating? I can't tell if he's trying to answer my question or ask me if I'm cheating.
Can you pregunto me?
I feel like that with
Univision.
Dutch does that, where like if you're listening to somebody speak in Dutch, they'll be like, this is not correct, but it's like over there is the shelf. And they're like, over there is the shelf. Papa doopa dapa dipa dapa dipa. And you're like, were you just making up that last bit? Because the rest of it sounded like English, more or less. I think you're fucking with me. And they're like, duh.
Amazing.
Yeah, flying on Lufthansa. And the
Lufthansa.
And the flight attendant came over and said, was du trinken? And I said, I'll have a Coke. Wait, what?
Yeah, that's
I think I know what you asked, but there's a possibility I don't.
Was that an accent or actually came, German?
It was actually German. And then later came by and said, Vlasht a seatbelt a flashen? And I'm like, yeah, my seatbelt's fastened. Wait, what? Because you go like, your brain goes, shit, that wasn't English. And I just responded like it was. And then you go, but the meeting was identical to the one that I guessed that it was, because she said, Vlasht a trinken. Instead of what are you drinking, I figured it out. But then parts of German just have the like 750 syllable words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're lost. Much like the protagonist of Avoid Asking, a short that we watched this week that was 3 minutes long, and I think exactly as long as it needed to be. It involves a kind of featureless dude in full bunny suit and mask for Biohazard going into a space that seems to have some kind of creature in it. And he asks the creature questions from a clipboard, and it's very bureaucratic seeming and slightly creepy. And then he asks the new question that they haven't asked before and gets quickly eaten horrifically and off screen. And then the guy who's running the experiment goes, okay, we're not going to ask him that one again. And you just go, ooh, yeah. I don't know. I thought it was a very good portrayal of the kind of like banality of evil that you get in mid-level government stuff. And I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, it's kind of that same problem as like the silo. Nobody knew exactly what they were building because there's just too many other agencies in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the reason I liked this one so much and wanted us to watch it was like this. I see a lot of stuff on YouTube that is like, we'll often even say in the title, like zero budget short film. And like this is pretty close to that. You could just be a person that has access to most of this, or you could just go pick it up at like whatever.
Yeah, and the dark is doing a lot of work too.
Like, absolutely.
Makes it very like moody, but also makes you not have to have sets.
Yes, right? They're framing everything that would be expensive where you don't have to see it, but it has impact. And like, that's, I think, what made me love this and want to bring it to people's attention is that like, this is like an awesome example of little to no money, but a lot of know-how and creativity, making something that's short and punchy and just works. And like, those are out there. So like, I think that's really encouraging for folks that don't have a lot of money that might want to do things. Like, I see Reddit posts on all the short film stuff I'm on all the time from people like, I have these ideas, my friends and I, but you know, we can't compete with whatever. And it's like, this didn't take an insane amount of money. You know, you can't do this with $10 in the back of a 7-Eleven, maybe, but it's not far off. And I think that's awesome.
What was the, there was a, I want to say it was about 20 years ago. Well, there was a kind of a really low budget thing. It was like two people in the cast. It was like called Vi or V or something like that. And it's like the guy and like the sort of demon creature, like in a, like a, like a basement pit sort of thing. I cannot think of it. It's like Vi or VA or VR.
Wasn't Vi that old silent film one?
Vi was one from like the 60s. Like there's
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, I just can't. It'll come to me eventually. But there was one where it was like, it was like absolutely maximizing the minimal, you know, bandwidth that they had to do the thing. I'm still kind of, you know, still kind of get after it. And yeah, I mean, that's always kind of a thing with that. This, you know, I thought it was an interesting kind of a deal. Although I was left with the question, like, if there is a control room area, and there seems to be some kind of communication back and forth, then like, why don't they just ask the questions from where it's safe? Like,
is
just
that safe?
Stick a speaker in there.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, skittery thing, we're going to stay over here. Like a police lineup deal. Like, you go over there, and we're going to be in here, and then it'll be better. But like, whatever. It doesn't
matter. And then the thing was like, I can't hear you. Come closer.
Lean over and talk into my good ear.
And they're like,
my, what big tentacles you have, Grandma.
It's like, we don't really like Joel. Let's just put him in a red jumpsuit and let's send him over there. He can ask the questions. If they eat Joel, that's fine. Then we'll send Mike in there. And if he eats Mike, then that's what they do.
I did like how the actor playing the guy in there asking the questions. I like that they didn't overplay his like nervousness or fear. Like, it was enough. There's a little bit of shaky, a little bit of whatever, but they didn't overplay it to where he's like mugging for being like, oh, I'm really scared. Like, they did a good job of like not, they clearly made a decision to like not overdo that, which I thought was smart.
And not overburden it with narrative, because even for, you know, having watched this 2-3 times and the process of like finding it and posting it, all that, like, my brain goes, oh man, this could be like, okay, is this like we get convicts to do this, right? Like death row inmates. This is how we don't worry about these people being spindle. Or is this the kind of thing where, having just watched all the Long Walk and all those Running Man and all that, like, is this a thing people can volunteer for? And if you can get through like your question, you get money to buy. And I'm like, it doesn't need that. Like, I'm trying to make this more complex, and it just needs the baseline fear of the dark and a monster. But like, you can see how this could get overblown and too wordy for what it is.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And you get
all logged down,
you know?
It would be a bummer if there was just a sticker that they linger on the file that says Specimen 5, Origin Alpha Centauri, or some shit.
Yep.
Yeah, it just becomes needlessly...
Or like a Names of the Demons book or something. I like the idea of just having this thing that we don't know what it is, but we know that it sleeps and eats. Potentially. You know, he says the left side of the room and the right side of the room for the lights. He doesn't say my left or your left.
Yeah.
I mean, I gather they've done this routine enough that they know, but that was a weird thing, because like, that makes it so I can't tell what the answers were, which maybe that was the point.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh my God. Maybe not. my God, this changes everything. No, probably not. All right, fine. So I say watch that. That's, anytime you get that much bang into that little buck, I'm for it.
Yeah, I mean, in the realm of, especially in the realm of like things that drift into sci-fi territory, there's absolutely a very like bloated bag of shorts that, with all good intentions, have way too much like everything. Cause like, well, I must explain how the Gingleflats fight the Bingledings, and it's just like, no, you don't. Like, I don't want to.
You don't want to know how they hook the Fernum to the Schnabitz?
It's just like, it's just like they're just, you know, and God bless people. I understand where they're coming from, but it's just sort of like there's so many sci-fi things that just like, oh, my back is hurting with all the lifting, all the data that doesn't matter. And it's like, so I like that this kind of drifts into that area without like falling into the, like, we must explain all the things, because just sci-fi seems to be like above sci-fi and fantasy, I guess, maybe a little bit. Like, it's just absolutely this thing of like, we must explain all the things.
I think their fandoms are the ones that are most likely to really appreciate lore. So I feel like you're stuck doing it, because, like, look at the first Predator movie or the first Alien movie and look at how basically none of the rest were as successful because they kept trying to teach us more instead of just doing cool shit. So yeah, maybe it's inevitable with the sci-fi thing. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Most of the time it's just, it's the same reason I have trouble watching most Godzilla films. It's a lot of talking and not enough monster. So much bureaucracy.
The true monster. Well, let's then talk about Friday the 13th for the final chapter, or Viernes el décimo tercera, lo cuarto, la el capítulo último.
Ooh.
Último.
Oh, that's funny.
Sir, I have not seen a more blatant form of false advertising since The Neverending Story.
The final chapter of 1984.
Ah, you got me on a technicality.
This is the only one of these that we're going to... Actually, they just stopped chaptering them after that.
It's very strange.
So it was the final chapter. The rest of them are appendices.
Well, and the fact that they switch from, like, numbers, Roman numerals, not doing numbers and just doing subtitles.
Right.
Like... It is the most annoying thing to try to look up and or have to like write into our show notes, because like, I have to go, shit, was this numeral 4? Is it Roman numeral 4? Oh, it's not even a 4. It's just new beginning.
It's just Jason's dead the final Friday. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was talking to Ryan today and he's like, what do you watch? I'm like, 4, 5, and 6. He's like, is that Jason's Dead? I'm like, I think that's 8. He's like, I thought 8 was Manhattan. I'm like, oh shit, you're right. I think 8's Manhattan. Which one's Spacing? No. He's like, what the fuck is Spacing?
Like, well, 10 is Jason X. I get that.
I tried to explain it. I don't know if it works, but
it landed on Crystal Lake landed on you,
or Blood Lake, or what do they call it in 5? Or is it?
Oh, yeah, they changed the name. They Camp Blood, but then they're like, oh, we named it this other thing. Like, what the hell you did?
It's in my notes somewhere here. As much as my text seemed like a joke, I did take copious notes this week.
Camp Garnet Pond, I mean, you have to take notes with these. And that's why, even though I watched these like a month ago for the first time, I went back and watched them and took notes, because they will blend together.
Oh, absolutely.
I think they're wildly different quality-wise. Mm-hmm. But they will just go like, was that the one with the... No. Oh, shit. Okay. So just keeping grounded on it. But that said, this is probably my favorite of the series.
Yeah.
And it's because of Crispin Glover more than anything, mm-hmm. because I just love everything he does. His, like, he cannot so just weird. Say a word like a person. Everything well, he is a always... huge choice. I fucking love his dancing. Like, he's just, David Byrne is like, you kind of look like a spaz, dude.
He's got that weird, like, hurt / confused vibe all the time, and he always looks like someone with a heavy accent said his lines to him right before they started rolling film in a different language, and he's like translating and parsing it out to his other actor, because mm-hmm. he always looks a little pained and so deliberate, and it's like, you are just a different animal, aren't you? Like a weird, he's a special boy. Bug. Yeah.
But I think more than that, I just like all of the little stories in this. And I keep saying that I feel like this is almost an anthology series where it's like little short films and then the murder. But in this one, we have like Axel, the super creep, and the like sarcastic nurse. And mm-hmm. their scenes together, I think, are electric. And the dialogue in this tends to be of the like very wry, like almost 1940s thing. Like, she doesn't want to have sex with him, and he says, what, you got the curse? And she goes, if I do, you're it. Like, oh. Boom, boom, boom.
Cha-cha-cha-cha.
It's like, where are you going? I'll tell you where I'm going. I'm going crazy. You're just...
That made me actually laugh because it was just such a Catskills joke. Like,
it's yeah, just every 5 seconds somebody's doing either vaudeville or like, I'll tell you what it is, buddy. I'll tell you right now. Yeah. That kind of thing. So in this one, if you'll recall, Jason has been taken to the morgue at the end of the last movie. So we're heading right into this one. And he just wakes up at the morgue. We don't know why. Maybe he wasn't dead. Maybe he right. just didn't want Axel to actively fuck on top of him. But either way, you know,
yeah, he
gets up and gets moving.
The mortician eating trope gets that whiff of necrophilia in this one. Yeah. And it's like, okay, you've leveled up. Like, whoa, okay. Oh, I do want to point out too that like I noticed this time too, like you get the previously on thing. And it's funny how like habituated we are to that, that doesn't seem weird to me. But if we had to go see a sequel to another movie and get what is very much like a like metatextual summary of the previous film, that would be really weird now. And yet feels perfically fine here.
And there's a
lot of 80s movies did that.
They're sitting around that campfire like they're about to film the little thank you so much for watching this movie in a theater. Guy in a theater, you're the best guy in the world.
You're the
you
real.
Get a blowjob from Scarlett Johansson, and it's just, they only do that when Colin Jost is in the audience. But but yeah, it has that weird, just like audience kind of feel to it, and
yeah,
that's very fun. But then just those guys are done. We don't really have to think about them anymore after the open. We throw away the, you know, Axel and the nurse at the open, and then we're like, here's our six dipshits in a car, plus the Doublemint twins.
Oh, right.
Bikes.
Yeah, which is and such a weird thing in and of itself.
And Jason Hunter Bob shows up.
Yeah. One of my notes is like, oh, a hitchhiker for a red herring. Wait, you've seen this before. Is this a red herring?
They just keep piling on, you know, and then finally you have Tommy Jarvis and his sister and mom. So yeah. There's like 15 people running around, so we can keep up a pretty good clip. I think it's part of the reason that this works is they just have so many bodies, but then also some of them are just very entertaining.
For sure.
This crowd keeps it. Yeah, it's so funny because like there's parts of these ones, like I don't know if you guys have this feeling too, where like as you're watching these ones, there's parts of each movie that like, you know, like in six, the last like third is such a fucking blast. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's like the last third is just a fucking hoot. And it's just like, but then there's a whole stretch prior to that where it's sort of like, it's like, and 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, stab a smushy, kill 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, like golly. But then you get that last third and it just boom into the high gear. But like with this one, it's sort of like you have, as Josh points out, like you have enough people running around and you can kind of keep things kind of moving. And yeah. what's great about that is that, like, you know, I've started to develop this thing in my head about the kind of the revenge of the nerds rule, which is that, like, you know, this idea like, oh, all 80s movies were sexist and awful and terrible and they're so painful to rewatch. And it's like, I think actually that like a lot of them aren't really as bad as fake memories would have created. But like, Revenge of the Nerds was the bad one. And then like a lot of the other ones, like, you know, I don't know if you all picked up on this, but like in 4, 5, and 6, like there are female characters that like defend themselves and like have like a thought or an opinion.
And tell the guys that are being gross jerks that they're gross jerks.
Yeah.
I had that same revelation on this set of three was like, you know, I don't think, because every time they would have any female character with a male character in a room, I'd go, oh, here it comes. And then it would be either not that bad, you know, or the opposite entirely, or just something neutral. And I kept kind of being surprised that I wasn't as put off by this as I thought I would be.
Yeah.
There's still like, you know, pointless boobs all over the place, but like that,
I get points.
But I owe you a dollar, but they kind of roll along and maybe they're far enough into it that, or the people making these are just like, yeah, that's not necessary. Like we don't have to be constantly gross. People know what we're here for and it's, you know, we have to see boobs, but mostly they just want to watch someone get their head blown up. So yeah, if you want to make it a lot of Borscht Belt jokes in between, fine, you know? And
yeah, that's what I was saying last time. Yeah,
they get weird.
They can be anything. So what they choose to be is always very instructive.
For instance, in this one, you get to have Corey Feldman sprinkled throughout and even get to watch him have a tantrum when he can't see a chick's titties with his little telescope.
That is the most...
Did not need a horny tantrum from Corey Feldman movie.
Man of shit.
Did not need.
He is the horniest little thing. He's not even 12.
Yeah.
Like, this is... That's not the, like, oh my God, I'm puberty starting and I'm the, like, horny kid with no self-control. That's the... I'm the kid on the playground who's telling your kid about sucking dick because I saw a bunch of porn I shouldn't have seen yet.
Or like if like my memory serves, like that's the era where like you're fascinated and curious, but you have nowhere near the kind of if I had been his age and some woman had taken her shirt off, I would have freaked out and ran away. Yeah. Like I'd be like, yeah, I want to see boobs. Like he's way too young to be that horny. But then again, it is Corey Feldman.
This is a very horny movie. And I think it might be in the running for the horniest of the series because you've got the like immediate, we have come close to a body of water and this guy is like, all right, skinny dip. And the dude strips down and jumps in. And then it's just all 12 of them in the water. They're just kind of swimming around naked except for like the one mousy girl.
And yeah, skinny dipping, much like quicksand, did not happen as much in real life to me.
Yeah, it really wasn't until I had a place where I had a pool and an expectation of privacy.
Well, and on top of that, like lakes are full of weird, gross things.
In the middle of the day. That's why, like, this is very horny, but it feels weirdly wholesome.
Yeah. That's
skinny dipping scene is just like, it's just bros being bros. You know?
Well, you know what else, man? No phones. People just existing in that moment.
Until they got stabbed in the head.
Oh, maybe the 80s weren't better. Dipshit.
And then there's like the Crispin Glover thing. Like his whole little arc is just precious. And having the girl at the end, it's like, was I a dead fuck? Like, you know what? I think you're incredible. And it's like, you roll the credits on that. That's just a heartwarming little movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, then he gets horrifically killed because this is Savini doing what he does best.
Oh, yes.
And
that's fantastic. He really is on his game in this one.
Yeah, like his absence is felt in the next one.
Yeah. Is it the first kill where you have, like, the slash across the throat with the hacksaw? And you're like, damn, that looks great. And then he twists the head all the way around. And you're like, oh, fuck. Someone's making a demo reel. Like, holy shit. Like, I think we're trying to top ourselves. And I am here for it. So, yeah, there's real good fun in this one.
So then another thing, too, this is one of those ones where you get the final act of this. And then there's a lot of running, distracting. And this is another reason why I've really enjoyed going back to revisit these is that you kind of invent fake things in your head, or you just misremember things, or, you know, time and age, whatever. So I have this retro football game on my phone where it looks all very Tecmo Bowl kind of thing. And it's like, you know, you just run little basic routes and whatever. But the way that the game mechanics work is like, once the ball goes somewhere, then all the defensive bad guys go, ball, and they kind of go to where the guy is. And that's sort of how it functions. And so like rewatching these, I had this great realization that like part of the thing with this character is that like there's not necessarily like the Michael Myers like I must kill Lori at all costs, like that is the thing that I must do. Like in this one, it's sort of like he just kind of goes like, he's like, I want to get this person, and then something makes a noise, he goes, oh, another killing thing, and like, oh, it's that way. And it's just like it's kind of great. Like, it just sort of, it solves that issue of, like, giving him, like, agency and motivation and whatever else. Like, nah, that's not interesting.
Yeah, he's like, just kind of like an orca.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, yeah, I mean, it's, like, it's just really kind of, that's what it boils down to. And it's kind of fun to rewatch these to, like, see it in real time and be like, oh, yeah. They kind of just, there wasn't a bigger plan or a bigger plot in terms of, you know, adding motivation, this, that, and other thing. Now, there's plenty of those that have that in there too, and that's perfectly fine. But like, as it stands, that makes it that much more interesting because, you know, if you've ever played, and I'm sure we all have, you play like, you know, like playground games or like camp games or whatever else, where there's like the capture the flag games and the Red Rover games, all these kinds of running, touching, tagging kind of things, or play flag football for that matter. And if you go and you move your side, then the person can't get the flag. It's like there's a lot of that with this, really. Is that like if you just kind of go this way and then something else happens, he's just not going to keep going, like, well, that motherfucker's wearing the wrong sweatshirt. I got to get him. And like, there's nothing personal about it. It's just sort of like, it just sort of occurs.
Yeah. This is like, the definition of like, I don't have to run faster than the bear. I just have to run faster than you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And it's like, there's something kind of like, you know, I can't really articulate this in a great way, but it's like rewatching these ones. And certainly with this one, because it is a higher amount of humans, it's just sort of like, there's something kind of, makes it more unexpected, I guess you would say. Like, you can kind of parse out, if you've seen enough horror movies, you kind of have a general sense of who's going to make it. But it's sort of like, at the same time, you know, you're sort of like, well, maybe this person will be spared, or maybe that person will be spared. Like, you have that in Six, where, like, daughter's relationship with Sheriff Dad, like no, he's going to get folded in half. Like, ah, yeah. That's unfortunate. And so it's kind of like, but it's just one of those things where it's kind of refreshing to kind of go back and watch these, and also really realize the, you know, to the point of, you know, the kind of like almost more wholesome horniness. It's sort of like a kind of a refreshing reminder that not every single thing has this like terrible, like acrid kind of awful shit in it. And like, just doesn't really have that. And then this would just sort of like keeps things moving into such a way that it's just sort of like has a nice kind of rhythm to it. Like, I felt that this one, I think from start to finish, this one's probably the more complete idea of, you know, from start to finish. The only exception being with Tommy doing the whole, like, you know, cutting off all of his hair and thing. And it's like, because we did this in two, and it's like, and it's like, then I think about like how Corey Feldman's life sort of went. I'm like, I wonder if this really fucked him up permanently. I wonder.
There, he was already, he was born weird though, like Glover. He was just, there is something so like weirdly, like preternaturally mature, but not exactly, because he's not like the 40-year-old, 10-year-old from The Ring.
Right.
He's just, but like when he's standing on a little block so he can get under the hood of the car and then just go, you know, well, it looks like we need to get, you know, give me a size 2 spanner and whatever, and just starts fixing the car. And he's like, of course.
In my notes in real time, I'm like, oh, this kid is thinking he's so cool and he's going to fix the car. And then like the next note, oh, I think he actually does know what he's doing.
Yeah, his sister
it's
is
a
just
weird
like,
thing.
Tommy, fix the car like you always do.
Yeah, no. And you expect that to be like, well, why don't you fix it, dipshit? And he's like, fine. And it's not that he can't, he just didn't feel like it. Oh, speaking of, I want to point this out too, because I think it really only happens that I remember in this one. The kills are all great, but this one has at least like 2 or 3 slow-mo moments.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, the gal getting thrown out the second story window onto the car is actually really beautiful.
Some of the stunt work in this, or
it
however,
is astonishing. Yeah, I was just like, this is an amazing scene. And I have my next note is Gordon also goes out the window because dogs be doing it for themselves. So
there was though a couple of them. Yeah, falling out the window in the car, and then bunches of people getting thrown through windows.
Yeah.
There's one that's in slow motion and shows the like fall and roll and land.
That's the first one, I think.
And it's clearly not the same person, but it looked amazing.
But it is a person.
Yeah, and then in a second, it's, you know, in a second we're back to the actor we've been watching. But the fact that a stunt person could do that in slow motion and not just shatter their pelvis is pretty damn,
yeah,
it's cool.
Astonishing.
This also has, so because we have so many people, you're saying it, I agree that you get a little thrown off like what tropes there are and who we should be looking at, because everyone seems like sex positive and just running around having fun. But we have the little family, and then we've got all 8 of those other people, and we have our mousy girl who has been saving herself for her boyfriend, Lord Farquaad. And the dude's face is highly rectangular, right?
Yes.
Okay, true.
Good. There's a little Eric Stolten mask, a little Lord Farquaad.
Oh, handsome. Oh my God, this guy might hear this.
He's a handsome fellow. It's fine. He has hair. What does he got to worry about? But she's like got that little wholesome relationship into saving herself, and for a little bit she's edging up as the like final girl material, and yep. then she's like, Farquaad and I are doing it tonight. I'm like, oh, okay, well, then it's
she's the one that has the really tragic 80s underwear, right?
Yeah, the only character, because I think every female character except the like family folks gets their boobs out in this movie. She's the only one who's wearing a bra and just demonstrates that why everyone else wasn't. It's like, because this was the 80s and it wasn't the 1880s, but it's just like
sure
two little lace handkerchiefs tied together, just resting limply atop this poor kid's chest, not offering her any kind of support, not even like
there
a quantum
to be no
solace.
Practical value.
Yeah. Like, what is this for?
It makes me think of that scene from Pleasantville with Reese Witherspoon. And she's looking in the mirror after she's getting dressed for school. She's like, "It's like I could kill somebody with these things."
I just forget that's Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen that in a while. I should watch that again.
Yeah, it's a fantastic movie.
I like that one.
Ooh, so other things in this movie that weren't in previous is we've got Jason Hunter Robb, who yep. is actively going after Jason, like camping in the woods, stalking him like Bigfoot. And like he does not get any further than anybody else. And I think that's why that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he yep. can be lore man and say, here are the things you got to know about Jason. And then you're still in the same Friday the 13th movie as everybody else.
Yeah. It's another step on the path of immortal, undefeatable zombie.
Yeah.
Well, cause it's like, the problem you get is that mechanic doesn't work if you don't have Donald Pleasance doing it. You know, it's like that's because you think about it with Halloween, like the only reason why that works is that manic, sweaty, way high caliber acting than is necessary thing that Donald Pleasance can do. It's like that's the level you have to have for that character, or just don't, it doesn't work. But you said that perfectly, Josh. Like, he's in the Friday the 13th movie, like, that pretty much nails it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did enjoy that. And then
I did like that Jason displays someone. Like yeah, hanging in the folks. Doorway all the way around the house, basically, because when she's trying to leave, it's like open the door to escape, run to the next door. And I'm like, this is a Bugs Bunny cartoon. This is great. But like, then you're like, this is hilarious. But also, dude has like railroad spikes through his wrists, crucifying him to a doorway. And you're like, oh, like, again, even with something like that, that's kind of just a throwaway jump scare. Like, it's gory and intense. Like, they haven't gotten to like the 90s relatively bloodless, you know, slick horror yet. So even when the movies are lightening in tone, the gore is still front and center and the violence is creative, which is fun.
Well, yeah, when Crispin Glover gets the meat cleaver to the face, it's like, I mean, he's literally just and it's very like, geez, it's kind of I'm not gonna say grounds it, because that's a bit much, but It does kind of get your attention. You're like, oh, geez.
Yeah, there's some that are not like creative enough to be like have ironic distance from. Like they're just too brutal and quick. Yeah, for sure. Although my favorite might be, I forget what the death was, because I think my notes are just one of the people while dying just keeps screaming over and over. Oh, he's
killing me!
Killing me! He's killing me! Like, you know, everyone does.
Right. Yeah, that's that's Jason Killer, Jason Hunter Bob.
It is so good. Oh,
and he's like, run. He's
and it goes on
me.
For so
he's
long.
Actively killing me right now.
He you won't be killing me much longer because I'll be dead.
And then he will kill you. He will be killing you, and then he will have killed you.
You can use my car. There's a spare on the.
To y'all, that was my last intestine, last loop of intestine. He's
now he's
me.
Moving on to my.
It could just be the Mustafa's death
very
scene
much,
from Austin
or
Powers.
Pee-wee Herman and Buffy. Yeah, it is kind of that, and like that made me laugh super hard. So, bravo for managing to do like both really like crazy gory kills and insane, which is that kill is also pretty gory. There's blood everywhere, but I don't know.
I did make a note, like you said, Chaz, that Tracy, our final girl, is a scrapper. And she just beats the shit out of him. And I think she actually managed to do more damage to him than anybody else, because she actually gets the machete into his face. like through
yeah,
that, the
mask. Yeah, that's true.
And, not and the, I just forget that the whole hammer thing, claw and the shoulder and
yeah, Jason sliding down the machete is fucking ooh, yeah, that's it, that is it. Money right there. That is great. And then speaking of like the impactful ones too, Charlie, that you'd mentioned, the gal that just kind of gets smushificated in the shower. Yeah. That's one where I was just like, oh, that one's not fun. Like that's yeah, just
that
brutal.
Was ugly.
Oh, okay. Like it's interesting. Like I don't know because. Maybe you guys know better. It's been a long time since I watched like the documentary on this, but like, I don't know if it's just that like they can't tell sometimes where the tonality's at, or they just don't care about it like being consistent from scene to scene. Because like sometimes it's legit funny, sometimes it's unintentionally funny, sometimes it tries to be funny and falls flat, sometimes it's legit scary, sometimes legit upsetting, sometimes it's played for laughs. Like maybe all of it's meant to be in here. Maybe your anthology idea is right, Josh. But like. It well, never took me out of it that it changes so frequently, but I didn't notice it.
No, it's a feature. I think it's a feature.
Yeah, yeah. There's an off kiltering that sort of seems to be part of the vibe. But if you haven't got a chance to watch the his name is Jason, it's definitely worth watching. It's not as just exhaustively big as the Nightmare
one's fantastic.
I mean, it's amazing. I don't take nothing away from it, but it's not that size, but it is. It is a really enjoyable one to watch just because you get some insight into the, like not just the creative process but like the creative energy that it takes to just be like we're just coming up with new math at this point, like we're just kind of trying to see what we can do, and it's like and there's something pretty awesome about that, like it's I don't think it's easy. And it's like, but then these guys are just kind of going along as they can go along. And sometimes, some stuff works better than others. Like, by the time we get to six, there's a couple of moments where, I swear to God, when the girl gets yanked out of the window, I think it goes, doink.
Yeah, yes, it does. And I thought I heard a Wilhelm scream in one of these, too. And it's just like, God damn it. But yeah, I thought there were a couple cartoon noises in six, because that was definitely like... abandoning the idea of being scary, I think, which is again, I think part of why we all had like friends had, Friday the 13th lunchboxes and all that, like the 80s horror was scary-ish, but I think by mid 80s, like the marketing machine had figured out like, if we tone these down a little, the kids that are getting in trouble for getting snuck in by their older brother or whatever, will eat this shit up on, hell, there's a Nintendo game for these, for Christ's sake. But like, I don't know. This is such a strange thing. Like revisiting this, I am baffled that this series exists. And the fact that so much of what we now call cliches were actually invented by these guys. This is kind of like going back and watching Citizen Kane. People go, what's the big deal? And you're like, well, that's the first time all that shit happened, And like, there's other older stuff, Black Christmas and whatnot. But like, this does a good job of creating what we would see people imitate for the next 40 years.
Yeah.
So it's just astonishing that all kind of comes together with, scotch tape and bubblegum.
Yeah.
But then just also, this is kind of the quintessential Friday the 13th movie, like the archetype of it.
I think maybe five.
I can't stand five. But for me, this is almost like the platonic ideal of what you think of when you think of a Friday the 13th movie. And it's crazy that it's the fourth one. Because when is the fourth... in any horror saga been that great? Like that seems to be at least at the start of the decline. Like Hellraiser, Bloodline.
Oh, by Hellraiser, you're checked out. Yeah.
The Dream Child, or Dream Masters 4.
Yeah.
And that one was kind of a slog, and then Dream Master was kind of fun. But yeah. So this one, like, it is always funny to watch these and then look at the Rotten Tomatoes on them. Because you go like, oh, that was super fun. And then it's like 20%. And it's just like, this depraved series continues to barf its shit upon us. Like, you guys, it's not like it's not prestige cinema, but these are fun and like, by and large, pretty well made. You can see what's happening. The people are doing good acting. The effects are good. Like, the score is always like Hitchcockian masterfulness. Like the
scores are fantastic. That's worth noting. Yeah.
So for me, like this is an 8 out of 10. It's
nice.
It's not the Citizen Kane of movies, but it is the Citizen Kane hotter of movies. No, that's later.
That's why he gets paid the big bucks, everybody. yeah, this is pretty fun because I do think we're really kind of hitting our stride in this one, which again sounds weird to say on the fourth one, and I don't want to say that to like diminish the previous ones, but like I think it's becoming the muddled memory that I have of it at this point. There's creative shit happening. I do think, for me at least, I bounced hard off of Feldman in this one. I could not stand him. I mean, I don't know. Maybe if I like shaved my head and popped my collar, I would get like a different perspective like he did. But like, you know, that it was, I did enjoy when he kind of snaps and just starts like beating the shit out of the already dead Jason.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of fun. I think my note on that, oh yeah, my note is Tommy finds out there is something better than a dead cat and a string to swing it on. So, because it is just such a like, that clumsy 80s idea of what makes someone crazy or catatonic and all that. And it's like, okay, I have a little bit of love for that. But in general, he just kind of annoyed me every time he popped up. And I think as much as I generally like Crispin Glover, he's just so distracting in this.
Yeah.
That I like his arc, but he is just in another movie. And that also kind of took me out of it a little bit. But I think the effects are fantastic in this. There's a lot of great shit to look at. And overall, good movie. So like, all that negative stuff to be said, I still think this is like a 7. This is pretty good, especially like if you're looking at the whole of this series, this is right up at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm kind of like right there in the middle. Like this is probably my favorite one. And this one is, I think, the one of the most complete ones kind of start to finish. Like I said, the last third of 6 is just fucking rules, but then like a lot of other parts of it are going to be, so like each one of them has like bits that it really hits on. And then, you know, there's other parts that kind of slog through. This one is, like I said, kind of more of a complete idea. And like I said, I have sort of a lot of affection for this one because I ended up doing it. Me and Mark did it. We hosted a screening for this one time. And then we did a restoration thing with this at one point or another. So I've seen this one a bunch. and it's like, and it's just, and it's, you know, there's no, I don't feel like there's a lot of cynicism in the execution, which I think is a lot of times what people like Siskel and Ebert and other kinds of people that were really playing up this, like, oh, depraved this and all this thing and irredeemable, blah, 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 blah. I really think what they were doing was they were mixing in a bunch of other stuff that wasn't this, like, all into the same soup. And, like, they weren't actually watching the thing itself. They were watching, like, a collection of things.
Yeah, if you go into a horror movie going, well, I'm watching a horror movie. And if you go into a horror movie that's a slasher going, I'm going to watch a fucking slasher. Like, yeah, you're going to assume it's all the worst tropes of that genre. And you're right. If you watch these, this is nowhere near as sleazy as a dozen other movies we've watched from the same era. There's grosser shit that made last year on Tubi, you know?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's really kind of my, you know, like the thing that's been so nice about revisiting these is that it is kind of nice to be reminded that there's a lot of stuff that's in these that is a lot better executed and it looks a lot more like movie film for theaters than you would remember. But then at the same time, if you're mixing in, you know, fucking Slaughterhouse and like, you know, I Spit on Your Grave and things all in the same bucket, well then yeah, everything's gonna, it's the old Malick's 5 pounds of potato salad, 5 pounds of cow shit thing. It's sort of like at a certain point, they all kind of get coated in the same stuff. And it's like, it's kind of a bummer because this one does a lot of entertainment to it. But I liked it. I really like, Josh, my big takeaway here is your phrasing of the kind of wholesome horniness. Cause I think that's actually a really great way to, it's a really great way to describe it. Cause I think that captures it super, super well. So yes, yeah, so I would say I'm going to go like right in the middle. I would say 7.5. Yeah, I have a lot of affection for this one, a lot, and I think there's a lot of great stuff with it. If nothing else, then Crispin Glover's wonderful dancing.
The dance is good.
But yeah, I'll say 7.5 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10. Just keeping old stag films in the cabin.
Oh, God, 16mm porn, baby.
What the hell?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I do frequently wonder, like, with all of the movies that have the college kids and their dipshit friend, I just go like, what is Teddy bringing to the table? We never see him do anything that would go like, oh, I get why they hang out with this guy.
Yeah.
He makes them laugh, or they like to laugh at his expense. Even like, he is a rounds out their bowling league. Like, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any upside to Teddy.
Yeah, because this movie doesn't set up the same scout troop, something around. Like, that would be the thing. It'd be some like bizarre circumstance strung them together. But like, yeah, this would be in a different movie where these were like outcasts. Then yes, you get a bunch of people that wouldn't hang out together, except that no one else will hang out with any of them. So you're forced to be friends.
Right.
Because I was thinking about what you were saying as you were saying it, Josh. I'm like, I can think of a couple of people right off the top of my head that none of us like, but constantly hung out with us because we were all we had. And one more body makes a difference sometimes.
So, yeah.
But these people are not in that situation. So yeah, it does seem a little odd because when someone's just being a total shitbird, it's like, well, the rest of you are pretty cool.
I just texted you guys a picture. I have very few Funko things, but I do have the 8-bit Jason.
Cause nice.
That's great. Like,
with the greenish skin?
Yeah, it was the special limited one they did at GameStop. I had to go wait outside of GameStop and get it came out. Like,
I'll post that in the show notes.
But yeah, I don't have very many of them, but that is one because it's just sort of like, yep, I must possess that for some reason.
Yeah, that's fair.
That game was so fucking hard.
Yeah, you could never get past the third room. It's like, God damn it all.
Yeah, watching a lot of old retro NES stuff and watching people play the old licensed horror games, they are fucking ridiculous.
That one and Ninja Turtles, too.
Ninja Turtles would fucking ruin my life. I was so excited to get that.
All right, just remember in college we had Earthworm Jim.
Oh, I loved it.
Couldn't get past the sea level. And we looked up a cheat code and got him infinite life. And we still couldn't find the end of the maze. We had no more timer. And like, how could people do that with a timer? It's ridiculous.
I just, super fast with that, Joshua, I just, in the process of going through every bit of ephemera that I own, going in the process of this move, one of the things I found in one box in the bottom of it, whatever, is I found my King's Quest V strategy guide.
Nice.
Oh, good. That'll come in handy.
Yeah, I was like, I'm glad I held all of that for 30-something years. But it was like, and I was like, oh, I remember that, because there's a goddamn catacombs maze, and you can never get the fuck out of it. And it's sort of like, and why does it still bother me to this day? Still, if I think about it, it still irritates the shit out of me. It's like let it go, for crying out loud.
Is anyway. Hell or heaven the place where you have to finish all of the games you abandoned?
Ooh,
oh, Jesus.
No. Definitely. No. Do you want to?
Here's Mist with a mouse that doesn't work. Sweet. See,
that's the problem. Is I don't even need anything broken. I'm just bad at games. I love them, but they do not love me back.
Do you want to take a pause or continue?
Let's do one more at least.
Let's do five. Five is relatively quick.
All right. Yes. We can talk
Challenge
about El 13º Viernes. Parte 5, Un Nuevo Comienzo. New beginning.
There you go.
So, the final chapter, you know, obviously not, but
it's a dark and stormy night.
It is super weird to me that they decided, well, nobody's going to believe it if we bring fucking Jason back. We just said it's the final chapter. What are we going to do? We'll just make a movie where the killer is dressed like Jason. You know, like Scream will be later, and they clearly that's what they were thinking. But
yeah, I think so.
You then get this weird conceit that I think kind of drags the movie down the whole time, because they don't have Jason really to drive the plot. So they start with, like, you have that lovely dream sequence with little Corey Feldman and
just
the men
nutting in the rain.
Yeah, and the men who have never used shovels before, just kind of limply slapping the earth.
My note is the Gravediggers remind me of that scene in Swingers where they're in the car hoot hollering about Vegas, but like that's a really long drive and eventually they're just tired and bored. And like that was me watching these guys feverishly start digging. And I'm like, in 2 minutes, you'll be leaning on those shovels having a heart attack.
They're just kind of pushing dirt around a little bit. It's like that bit's fun, but then you have this weird stretch where not enough people can be killed because we haven't really set our like substitute Jason into motion. And then we have a bizarro random kill from one of the inmates of the asylum on one of the other dudes in the asylum with him.
I just like that was so out of the blue.
Broad daylight.
Does not make a lick of sense.
Hey, you know this asshole character that you're going to hate for the rest of the movie? Just kidding. which is knock him down.
Interesting.
It's fun, but it doesn't have anything to do with any of the rest of it, right?
What about that super nonchalant front end loader?
I suppose.
That was pretty subtly played. You know, how kids drive around front end loaders at their halfway houses set at camps in the middle of the woods where they're going to learn to reintegrate to society.
I'm saying is none of that makes a whole lot of sense.
Oh, I get it now.
So, yeah, after a while, it starts to feel a little bit like a Friday the 13th movie, only that they have a couple of characters who are just flown in from the Disney Channel.
Temu, Randy Quaid?
Yeah, Jesus.
The hillbilly moron stock character does not get enough love these days.
There is one singular scene with them that is great. And it's when she is lambasting him because he never has original thoughts and he's just repeating everything she says.
That's pretty good.
Like, that's funny. It's from a whole other place than this rest of the movie's coming from, but yeah, but that bit's funny.
Her quote of, "You big dildo, eat your fucking slop." My note is, hell yeah, redneck lady. Like, they are really funny, as much as like they're super grating and annoying. They would do something every now and again where I'd be like, I kind of like that they're here. So same thing with Reggie the Reckless. Like, I think I saw him work a dark match with Dr. Death before like Sunday Night Heat in the 90s. But after his pro wrestling career, he became a child actor and was pretty good. I like that kid.
I like him. I like his brother. I like that whole little family.
Oh, that's Spike from Return of the Living Dead?
Yeah.
That's like the one little bit of the character work that I really dig in this.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Well, the interaction with the girlfriend and the little brother is so fucking adorable. Like, I just love that whole thing. Like, it's like, hey, how you doing? And she's like, hey there. You know, like, all this kind of stuff. It's like, it's very sweet.
Yeah, like,
and
oh, hey, like, little man, your game is getting there.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just adorable. Although this one does have the thing with the two hillbilly characters, which baffles me, which reminds me of Matt's frustration with vampire movies where they don't wipe their mouth. Get blood on their mouth and drives Matt crazy. When they have hillbilly coded characters and things like this, and they're just dirty, and
yeah, it's sort of like,
it's like, this is not a Steinbeck novel. Like, get a washcloth. Yeah. Like, it just looks, because like, if you've ever gotten schmutz on your face or on your arm or your hand or whatever, at a certain point, your system just goes, I can no longer accept this. I must get this, like, off.
Evolutionarily, we don't want that.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, it's so weird when you have that like weird hee-haw level of just sort of like, you're just covered in schmutz.
Which, like, is, again, I think just characters written by a guy that lives in New York. You know, yeah, that's just like, never right, seen people live in the country. You know, it's like that, like, farmers are always dirty and stuff. And it's like, my family is a lot of farmers. No one's dirty. So the second they're out of the field, they look like everybody else. But like, I think they're doing some of that. And also just the character development here is not great. You got your fat guy that, because it's the 80s, has to be shown eating at every possible moment.
But he's the one that gets killed early.
He does get killed early. That's true.
Forgive that.
Yeah.
We also have, I love the little orderly guy and Lana. And they're seen waiting to go out on a date after both of them have put in a hard day at work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it, you know, like, the sunny in the valley, cold in the mountains, and snow flurries up your nose. It's just like,
it's pretty good.
He's an adorable, balding, tiny man, but he just has such swagger. And I love that for him.
Yeah. Well, also the best thing about that scene is Lana is the thing where like, oh, I have to get to finish up and then I'll go around. And we get that wonderful shot that probably took him 2 hours to set up, where you get the camera looking down on the majority of the diner, and there's like cups and napkins and shit all over the place, and she takes the rag and goes wipey wipey, and then she's like plop and done.
Kind of, yes, exactly.
Kind of sprites off to the bathroom.
Like, which gives you a whole lot of like headcanon for her role at that diner, which is like, oh, you're the pretty one, so the boss doesn't give a shit when you do the clothes.
Like, it's just like that shot. I rewound that back. I'm like, wait, I'm like a crazy person. Oh, pff, that is just so silly. It's just so silly.
So to jump ahead just a little bit, because you get Jason axes a couple people questions, or whoever's killing people does. And then you get the greasy mayor stock character that's bitching to the sheriff about all the killing. And he's like, the sheriff's like, it's Jason Voorhees. Why is it Jason Voorhees? He's not supernatural yet.
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, the mayor guy, that's his one scene.
Also true. Which like, I was like in, sure we'd see him get killed, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. You would absolutely expect him to like have like a flat tire or something. And it's like, because like, you know, you think about the, shitty mayor characters, it's always the, mayor from Jaws. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. You know, like, and I assume that's what they're going for, right?
Yeah, and it was like, it's just like, he has the one scene and he just fucks off. He's just like, okay.
And also, he's not like trying to protect tourism dollars. He's like, this is our quiet small town. And it's like, sure. But like, wouldn't you want to, okay. But I was just, it struck me as like the character being weird, but then the idea that they're claiming it's Jason was like, maybe because we're watching him like one after another, this is more obvious than if you watch it a year later in real time. But like, is that something where they know the direction they're going and they're not getting the progression quite right? Cause like, yeah, by the end of this, he'll be a zombie in the next one or some shit. Or like, were they also not paying attention, or did I just miss a bit of lore? I thought that was also possible.
No, it's weird when in that little scene where he says, "I know who the killer is." I thought he was going to say it's Tommy Jarvis,
right?
Because clearly he's not right in the head because he stabbed Jason to death, and maybe he wasn't even before then. Yeah, he's highly suspect, which I think is the reason why he is the one suspect in six. But this one just doesn't really care that he's there most of the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
And you can't have a scene where he like has a stare down with real Jason, because we don't have real Jason. Instead, we have hallucination Jason, which is hard to say.
It really is. It's like judicial system.
When you have like guy in Jason mask running around and Jason the hallucination also running around, it's... I don't know. None of this worked for me. It felt very flabby in between kills in a way that neither four nor six are. And it just felt like things dragged. And then there was weird, like there's a sex scene that is like 20 seconds. We're like, oh, hey, baby. And then without a perceivable cut, they're just like, oh, was it good for you? And, you know, maybe that's the way other people live, but that was so strange. Like things that are long, things that are short, characters that are kind of picked from every school of acting, from Shakespearean to Disney Channelian. It's a lot sloppier than either four or six, I felt like.
Well, and also too, like the whole thing with this one is you spend a lot of time watching Tommy Jarvis do like the, what's that thing from Zoolander, was it Blue Steel? Is that what it is?
Yeah,
he does a lot of that face through a lot of this, and has I think like five words through about half of the movie total.
Yeah, he's weirdly like, oh, he's catatonic, he hasn't talked in whatever, and then it's like, will you go tell so and so's breakfast is ready? And sure. After like 10 seconds, he's like, okay, I guess. Then he goes back to not talking, and I'm like,
that's not how
you
catatonic works.
You can't take like a break from being the silent guy. Like either you're Silent Bob or you're not. Actually, wait, no, this is right on par for Silent Bob. Fuck.
Yeah, they always get at least one.
But then it's like, really the whole thing is like, you've got this central character that doesn't, you know, like there's a tragic whatever to it, but it's sort of like all the dynamics are just sort of don't really add up to much. And then as you're kind of going through kind of cutting your way through the cast, you're kind of like, okay, what's the end point or whatever else? And then they Scooby-Doo that shit in the last 10 minutes. And you're like, all right.
And I don't think
that's a weird choice.
That's not what anybody wants out of a Friday the 13th movie. We're trying to figure out the identity of the killer. Like that should never be the question. So like that format doesn't really work, but then also the execution is really clumsy. Because when they show his face and zoom in on it, you go, the fuck is that guy?
Just for a bit.
And then, then the next scene, he's like, folks may remember Bob the maniac ambulance driver from the beginning of the film when we zoomed in on him for a second. And I'm like, no.
Oh, you didn't remember that one scene when they're mopping up the bodies with the meat wagon and an unnecessary helicopter? But
yeah, I mean, but like that guy, the first time through, didn't make an impression at all. And when they revealed the face, I was at Wikipedia going like, who the fuck is that guy?
Oh, see, the first time he has that split second where he goes, sorry, did you say something? The guy's like, no, I wasn't talking to you. I was like, oh, that's our guy.
Yeah.
And then I immediately was like, no, I must be wrong because he didn't show up anymore. But like in that moment, I thought that was the tip off. And then the movie swerved me twice, I guess. So like maybe it just depends on how lazily you're watching it, because I'm not a guy for details, thus the copious notes.
Well, and on top of all of this, like, you know, there's some, this one, you know, and I'm certainly not gonna be the last person to accuse people of this, but it's like this one had three writers, whereas six has got just Tom McLaughlin, just six. But this one has three writers, and it's like maybe it was just sort of like we had a little bingo tumbler of ideas, and we're just gonna
three
do,
credited like, writers.
Yeah, I mean,
if that's another thing too. So it's like if you got three credited, there was probably nine.
And so it's sort of like, you know, there was just a bingo tumbler worth of ideas. They're just like, we're just going to do all of them. And so then when you get that Scooby-Doo ending, you're like, that doesn't jive with any of the rest of this to this point. Like, that doesn't click at all. And so like, okay, well, rewind back. And it's sort of like, okay, well, then you start doing the rules not seeing. And then you go back to the very beginning where you have mean guy who kills eating guy. Vic. And then it's like, but the whole big thing at the end is, oh, well, ambulance driver guy was eating guy's dad, and he was driven insane by the thing the murder was. And it's like, but the sheriff guy knew that he was his dad. And so it's sort of like, why then is he there at the scene? And then once they reveal who the person was that got killed, why didn't they go, oh, fuck, this is your son, we should shuffle you off, because having you continue to work this shift seemed a little insensitive. And it's sort of like, no, we're just going to carry it on. And so that's, it's like, it just, it, like, you know, be all academic about it, but it just sort of like really falls apart under a real basic scrutiny.
Well, see, academic is exactly the way to go, because it's just, you're thinking of the wrong class. This is not philosophy. This is economics, specifically Reaganomics. That guy has to work. He can't go home and take a half day. Are you kidding? He's got one less mouth to feed. Wait.
Well, on top of that, like, don't they establish that, like, all of the people in this halfway house have been sort of placed there and from some like legal capacity in some capacity or other?
Well,
so like,
or maybe just excessive trauma.
Well, but there's some kind of legal
guardianship up happening.
Yeah, there's some agency of some kind or other that has placed them there. But that's sort of like, you don't want to rules not see it, but at the same time, you go like, okay, once one person murders the next one, I don't think that gets to operate as a facility any longer. I'm pretty confident.
You might be surprised.
It's like, well,
just
then,
from my limited experience.
Like, fuck,
but then, but that was the thing. Is like, so I started thinking about that, and I was like, God, it seemed like this game's kind of weird and kind of tone deaf. And then I started thinking about those instances, like in Georgia and Florida and Arizona and a couple other places, where there were these like care facilities that were just like these havens of like abuse and like neglect and murder and all these kinds of awful things. I'm like, well,
or again with the Reaganomics in that era, that's where you get the you know, boogeyman of the dangerous, scary, homeless guy is that, you know, Reagan shuts down all the mental health facilities and they just dump people on the streets instead of caring for them. So like, it's, I don't know. I don't think this movie's making any strong political statement or anything. And I do, if I can, to try to defend why I like this one, I think there's no way to like it as much as I do on a first watch, which is unfair to people that might be listening to this that have not seen these before. But here's why. I think the entire idea of Tommy Jarvis is stupid and dumb, and I hate it. So watching this, knowing that, I'm just kind of ignoring that's happening and just watching the bits in between. And you get some really interesting bits, like they throw grandpa after getting his eyes stabbed out with like garden shears through a window. Like, that's fucking hardcore and awesome. You know, and then you have Reggie driving the now very, very chalant front end loader, which lets him like run over Jason. But then Jason gets back up and it's like, oh, okay, now he's starting to move more like zombie Jason. I think this might be the first movie too where they like explicitly show us like running feet and then him doing his walk and he still manages to get places. Like, I think a lot of those things felt like they were really kind of, I was going to say coalescing, but maybe congealing in this movie. Where this, thank you. This feels like we're getting the Jason that I think of, which is weird, admittedly. But then going into the next one, now we have that Jason. And so like this to me feels more like what I think of as headcanon, like what Friday the 13th is, despite also being the movie that is furthest away from it. So it does not work that way on a first viewing. But I think being able to just kind of like, you know, put horse blinders on, that's why I like this one. I like the shit that's happening.
Well, then,
not that plot.
The coda of the whole damn thing is at the very end when she's like in the room and turns around and he's, and then our this age, Tommy Jarvis has got the mask on with the knife. And it's like, okay, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
No, like, it doesn't. And he's got the mask from the last movie. It's not the one with the blue.
Yeah,
on
the color.
It's the one with
the
red.
Wrong. Yeah, yeah. It's like, what did he like go and like? What, for fuck's sake.
Well, because somebody was going, well, we got to set up the next one. We got to set up the next one. How are we going to set up the next one? We got to kill, you know, we got the killer is dead and Jason's dead and we're just bringing ourselves into a corner. Like, yeah, but see, what if Tommy Jarvis, see, what if he is super traumatized by having to kill Jason twice, right? And so he becomes Jason.
Wasn't that like, what we just made? No, shh.
Nope, that was the random ambulance.
That was before the last rewrite.
Yeah. So I get why it happened and it's just annoying that they thought they were going to go that way.
And 80s horror did that in general, though, right?
If they had taken that, like, that ending would have meant we're always going to have to figure out how to place a murderer in this installment.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that they were just like, you know what? We took a couple minutes and we thought about it. And we're like, we're just going to make him impossible to kill. Like, he's undead. Fuck it. Then it can just be him in every movie because that's what everybody wants.
Yeah. See, but guys, online petitions do work in 1984 just as well as they do today.
You just have to mail them directly to George Orwell. We'll get there. Yeah. So, like, this one for me is it's not just that it's not Jason that bothers me. It's that making it not Jason meant they had to do a whole other bunch of heavy lifting that they shouldn't have had to do. And made it feel like it just slowed down and just was padded around every single second of it. So yeah, this is close to the bottom for me. It's like a 5 out of 10. 5s out of 10s.
I'm sorry, when you said the online 80s online petitions, my brain just goes like, hey, it's like, hey, AOL, this is your cousin. AOL online? Boy, I've got this thing you're really gonna love.
Listen to this.
Yeah. Beep, doo, 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 oh.
I didn't realize I was setting up for a joke. That's really good. That's fine. I love that. Yeah, I kind of already gave my justification why I had fun at this. I think you get like real fun kills and a lot of like kooky weirdness. The Tommy Jarvis stuff is clearly like half thought out and they felt perhaps that they were trapped in that story after having made the previous. So I just kind of ignore it, you know? And that made it pretty fun. Like the bits where fuck man, there's a scene where fucking Jason brings a machete to a chainsaw fight. And then you realize machetes don't run out of gas though. And then throwing a chainsaw at Jason is impotently hilarious. Yeah. So like, there's parts that you're like, fuck yeah, you know, like these have those kind of like, we talk about this sometimes, there's the, you know, Nightmare Kids, the Friday Kids, but this is a movie where I was rooting for the killer because I was enjoying the creative shit and I didn't much care about these people. Like this felt Friday the 13th to me. So you get like really cool, weird kills. There's fun. There's a high body count. This I know I looked this up once. I forget which one has the most. I feel like this was up there. And then, you know, boobs. So, yeah, this is great. I think this might be my favorite out of the series. So I'm going to give this one the 8 out of 10. Because I'm still realistic about where it lands as far as movies overall.
Yeah, I'm kind of more down with Josh Terry. Like, this one has parts that I like. But it just overall, it's just like this weird collage of stuff. Like, we didn't even talk about fucking the guy running the thing with the caffeine-free Michael Landon dude. And it's like, that is so weird. He's like the featheriest guy.
Oh, you are right, like, yeah.
It's so weird, the dynamic. Because he's got like flinty, like Jennifer Jason Leigh-esque sort of like sidekick person who just gets fuck all to do. And you get him, he's just sort of like, hey, how are you? And he's just like, wake up, dude.
Definitely.
What about like
a 70s
Temu,
youth pastor?
David Carradine that wants to go clean chicken shit for a meal?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
What's with that guy? You know, and then like, there's just things like that where they're like, yeah, one more body wouldn't hurt.
So okay. So yeah, I mean, there's parts of it that I find enjoyable for sure, but I'm kind of more with Josh. I just kind of, the parts don't equal the whole. And I just, there's so many weird things about with the Scooby-Doo ending and then the thing with, with him getting the mask and stuff. I'm just like, no, incorrect. So yeah, this one's kind of on the low end of it for me. So I guess, to be fair, I guess I'll say 5. It's really the same as Josh. I'll say 5 out of 10. 5 out of 10. I'd like to see the licensure process of your halfway house paperwork, please.
Yeah, no shit.
You know, I'm not into AI producing films or even like the AI fan film stuff that people have started to do, but I would suspend that for one that has Tommy Jarvis put on that mask and then turn around and go, smoking. And just the mask turns green, like, oh shit.
TM.
Yeah, it's a prequel.
For these properties we don't own.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like,
should they ever see, in my head, I've already made a Return of the Living Dead, Friday the 13th cinematic universe because of Spike. So, mm-hmm. Like, but yeah, let's throw some more in there. Let's just keep making this bigger.
Beautiful. Like, a whole multiverse with all of the intellectual property in it would be the best thing, don't you think?
I feel
I do love the idea of him singing the Ooh Baby thing back and forth with the Tar Man. Ooh, baby. Yeah. Ooh, baby.
And more pops. All right, then we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about the last of the Fridays for now.
Anybody? Yes, sir. Back in a moment.
So finally, we have Friday the 13th, part 6, Jason Lives, or El Décimo Tercero de Viernes, parte 6. Jason Viva.
And what is so great about this one is that they had a poor reception for the last one, the Tommy Jarvis thing. So they brought Tom McLaughlin in, and they're like, all right, Tom, you got to come up with something for this. And Tom goes, you know what would be cool? If we just make him this immortal yearly thing, like the groundhog, and it just sort of like, it just, how do we bring him back? Ben Franklin.
I don't know if you've heard of this really old story called Young Frankenstein.
and then we're off to the races. And it's like, from that point of inception, it's just sort of like, that's what we're doing. And like, and this one brings in some super interesting elements. For one thing, you actually have a bunch of children that are in peril.
Hell yeah.
Because like, there's been a lot of campers up to this point, or the camp settings, but like this one really has like legitimate, like a bunch of kids like are part of like the in the firing line, and it's like that's an interesting thing. This mm-hmm. one also brings in the concept of like kind of being funny at parts, like it being kind of like some humor in there a little bit.
I'd say a lot bit.
Yeah,
for but I mean sure. I but like it, but it's definitely much broader, much funnier than the other ones.
And that's interesting. And that brings an interesting element to it too. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, so it's like this one just has like, I don't want to do this stupid analogy of bringing new life into it, but like it really, Tom McLaughlin kind of just took this and took these parts and went, we should make it a start at point A and get to point B thing. Let's cut away all the rest of this nonsense. And then let's just make it kind of a roller coaster ride. So 6 is like a ride. You know, and it's like, and God bless him for that, because it makes it a lot. This one is a lot of fun to watch. Like this one has a nice fun clip.
I really like that they couldn't figure out where to go for number 5 and had to stick with like subbing out Jason, and then for this one they're like, fellas, you know how in the beginning of the 5th movie they have that dream sequence where the guys are digging up Jason? Why don't we just have Tommy go dig up Jason so he can stab him with a, like, light the grave on fire, but get this, he'll stab him with a lightning rod and then he'll get struck by lightning and then he'll just be a undead killer. They're like, wow, you're a genius, Tom. And then off they go.
Yeah, yeah.
Unapologetically, they just go, no, we're doing this now. And it's so good that you're fine with it.
It's a, like such a smaller juke than the he's actually an immortal worm, you know. Yeah. Like
in real time, rewatching this, you can see me get on board because my notes are as follows. So we're on a third Tommy actor who has apparently escaped an asylum with another patient to go destroy Jason's body. They dig up the grave in a storm, and what do you know? He's in there, all rotten and wormy. Yes, lightning resurrected Jason. So insane. Ooh, starting to rain as he lights a match is pretty great. punching a dude's heart out is also great. Oh, fuck. That Bond homage is chef's kiss. And then you just know what you're getting.
Yeah.
And the movie does not waver, does not disappoint, and delivers exactly that level of insanity for the next hour change. Fuck yeah.
Like, one of the other things that's one of the other things that has to be said about this one too. Pardon me. This one looks like a movie film for theaters. Like it actually looks like a movie. Yeah. Like there's a lot of
very
like legit.
Like yeah.
Yeah, like it really has like without it doesn't it's not too much, but boy does it look like a movie. Like it really does. There's whole sequences in this where you're just like, yeah, this feels like a movie. Like it's just like a movie. And it's like that adds to it. That adds to the ride, the kind of the eventness of it. And it's just like it just keeps. And like I said, then you get Kids in Peril, and you get a main female character who rules. She's great. I love how flinty and like sharp she is. Like it's just they just add the elements that work. And like Tom McLaughlin just sort of like said, just get cut away all this nonsense. Let's just do the thing that works. And I'm like, yep, that's what we need to have it be, and then off we go.
Yeah, did you guys, maybe it's just me, but when like the group of teens show up and like they learn about Jason from Tommy at the sheriff's station, is like, oh, John Hughes teens are a thing at this point.
Yeah.
like, oh, it's the John Hughes crowd. This is not going to end well for them. Like, they are not prepared for this. They could barely handle detention.
Oh, now I'm just picturing the like jump up in the football field and bring the arm up for the freeze frame and then just tackled by Jason.
Also, like, the thing where
they didn't make that trailer.
the fucking corporate-y paintball guys, whatever else, and he shoots him with the paintball gun, and Jason looks down, and you just look up, and I just want him to go like, "Bitch!"
With the Timu Rick Moranis.
Yeah, that was that
glasses within glasses.
That and his buddy at the beginning, and Tommy's buddy at the beginning, who's just sort of like, it's like, were you in the asylum for excessive, like, Jewiness? Because, like, he's playing that kind of hand-wringing 70s Woody Allen sort of character.
Very
like,
much.
Weirdly.
So, yeah.
It's like, okay, all right, I guess we're, all right.
Choice.
Yeah. Yeah, but then we get it again with the sort of nebbishy guy with the paintball thing. You're like, all right. It's a dumb, oh my doesn't God. Feel offensive or bad, but it's just sort of like, oh, that's a choice for sure.
I almost forgot we have, oh, go ahead.
We had the legally distinct Paul Giamatti running around in there.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The legally distinct Norm Macdonald, too. That one guy who just, every couple of minutes, like, oh, is that Norm Macdonald? No.
This movie, I was so excited about the James Bond homage earlier, but then there's the couple that I think reminds me a lot of the couple from Evil Dead 2 that shows up partway through. The daughter of the professor and all that, because mm-hmm. they're just kind of like rolling along doing their thing, a little too busy and whatever for all this, and then they encounter Jason and play chicken with him. And the car gets harpooned. Dude pulls a gun on Jason stabs him with a spear, and you know, you cut back to the teens, but then you get like the car exploding and Jason standing on it like fucking Simba on Pride Rock.
Yeah.
Like, and I literally like pumped a fist and went, fuck yes. Like another moment that like is intensely silly and also awesome. Like,
well,
there's
so
much
get
fun
some,
here.
Well, that's the thing, is that's what makes this one wild, is that they mix in some like that lady's, when she gets killed in that puddle or else, it's like, oh yeah, it's like, oh, that's a bummer. And it's sort of like, so it has those little moments of that. This also has my favorite mechanic that makes no sense in the world, which is sheriff guy's like, you know what I'm going to do? I don't know what I want to do. I'm going to take you to the edge of our jurisdiction and leave you there. Like the way you do with like a raccoon in your house. And you're like, well, if I just take him to the city limits.
You got to get your felon at least 2 miles from your house where they can track back. They'll just come back.
Yeah, they can just find their way back. Yeah.
There is a long and storied tradition of taking troublemakers to the county line and saying, just, you don't get to come back, but you're not my problem anymore. That is a real
banished. Yeah.
Essentially. And then if you get into Canada, it gets real depressing real quick. But but that is just kind of an old trope. That's like a Western thing. Like, all right, I took you to my end of my jurisdiction. I don't give a fuck what y'all do. And then, like, off they go. And so, like, it's kind of that small towny thing, but also, like,
but it's weird to do with
an invisible line on the ground.
It's weird to do with a murder suspect, I guess. That's
exactly.
My point.
Like, I don't know what's going on, but I want it to be not my problem.
It's like, okay.
I took this job because it would be easy.
I think Tommy is less hard to swallow in this one because we have his girlfriend, who is just fun. Megan.
Yeah, she's great fun. She's probably one of my favorite characters in the series. Like, she's just flinty and sharp and fun and funny and just like, ah, she's great.
I think I got to give my fave to old Prospector Gravedigger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. He's just like,
it's a weird that he's not George Buckflower because he has that big crazy drunk driver's energy. Yeah, you know?
And he's just like, all he wants to do is get left alone and not get in trouble because someone dug up a body. So I'll just go rebury it right quick and I'm good.
His rationale is fantastic. It's like, well, to blame me, so I gotta cover the thing up. And it's
so
like,
good.
It's like, oh, you silly old man. Like,
just maximum laziness causes such a problem in this movie.
It's also indicative of every person in this thing has no inner monologue.
Nope, everything's also out loud.
Like, I just wrote down something like, this is great, I'm having such a good time. It's like, okay. The guy and like the one horny guy, because this is a weirdly chaste installment, right? Like, we have one somewhat horny couple and no nudity. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. But part seven.
Oh, I hadn't noticed.
Yes, I had, because I was
trying to take high road, but
doing my job. Titties are my job. So that guy. Everything that comes out of his mouth seems like something that should have been kept in his mouth. You know, like the worst offender is when she's in the bathroom and he's driving the RV. Like, Nikki, are you taking a dump back there? Oh, mind if God. I snatch a peek or vice versa? You might think that in your head. That would be a funny thing to say. And then you're like, shit, no, that wouldn't be a funny thing to say. That's gross and horrifying. Because
your brain can predict the future where you get punched.
It makes me think of that line from End of the Apocalypse where the guy, she says, you're being a child. And he just goes, a sexy child. He's like, oh. just fucking rules. But this one just clips. Like, it just pops along and you get the thing with the RV and the thing and the goddamn laser pointer on the gun becomes like a thing later on, and it's like, oh, all right.
Oh, well, my favorite line in this whole thing is Megan quit clowning around. I'm not the one with the funny red nose. Like,
that's pretty good. Yeah,
such a good line.
Just so much fun. But then, like the last, like I said before, at the very beginning, like the last third of this is just a fucking ball. Like, mm-hmm. It's just quick, and it goes along. It's just one thing after the other, and like, oh, boom, are they gonna make it? Oh, he's gonna, oh, the kids, and oh, the thing, and the thing is like, I've gathered a large boulder the size of a small boulder out of this boat. Like, I got this whole plan, and it's just a pop, and a pop, and a pop, and it's just so much fun. It's so much fun. Last third of this is just a blast.
Well, they actually do so, like, they have a plan and they put it into action, and it works.
Yeah,
and that has never been allowed to happen before because everybody's on their back foot the whole time. So they like that makes a difference. I think that's fun.
So, questions. Because again, I always wonder if I'm just missing stuff. So in this one, we have our first legitimate supernatural zombie Jason that is unkillable. He's realizing that in real time, right?
There's moments,
the first couple times when he gets like something happens to him, he kind of like looks and then kind of like looks up and you kind of see him going like, all right. Or at least, like, that's kind of what I got. Is that what's happening? Is he still smart enough to do that? Because one of my notes later, when you get near our final showdown in the house, like, when he goes up and cuts the phone line and then, like, puts his knife back in a sheath on his thing, I'm like, that feels wrong to me. That seems too thought out, too. Like, that seems like Jason went into, like, a woodshed and was, like, carefully selecting things and strapping them on. And I don't think of Jason that way, which, again, is part of, like, the weird, malleable nature of memory, but like for the stereotypical Jason in my head, he's just this mindless, like the thing in front of the thing that makes the noise, the thing I kill. And like, this seems to have like planning, but at the same time, it does seem like he's aware. Where do you guys land on that?
Kind of in between, yeah, because by the time you get to Manhattan, there are so many things that he's doing that don't seem very Jason-y. He is remembering too much, he's holding grudges, he's like picking up the hedge trimmer and figuring out how to start it, and like, he's not just fumbling around with pointy implements by that point. Yeah. So I think in this one, it may be leading up to that a little. It didn't stop me in this one though.
I mean, I enjoyed it, like, but it was enough that it made me like, you know, you do that like golden retriever thing, you kind of cock your head a little bit and like make a note. Like it was enough for that. And like, so that's not bad. It's not like some mortal sin for the movie, but it's an interesting kind of reversal of the progression towards zombie that we've seen so far. Because even when he's fully human, he's pretty straightforward. So, and they also kind of seem to play around with just how intelligent he is, for to try to couch it in soft terms. Like the amount of what he can be expected to do, I think maybe also varies a little bit from these movies.
Like, so with a little occupational training and therapy, could he work at a Goodwill?
Kinda. Like, or is he like, okay, you might not jive with like the boring ass society like you'd have to fit into, but left your own devices, you're plenty creative and you have your own things you're into. It's just that unfortunately here's our murder. So, right. You know, we can't quite pursue that. So I don't know. It's just, I noticed it here and I don't think I had noticed it up to this point, that he seemed a bit savvier than he has been to this point.
Well, that was that sort of like, they didn't, even though there's humor in this one, they don't ever take it to the point where he like, you know, walks into a kitchen and then sees one of those little dabbing birds, you know, from like the 80s. He doesn't sit there and look at it and be like kind of like puzzled by it or whatever else. Because like when Michael Myers turns his head slightly to look at the fellow being, you know, stabbed against the wall, it's like there's something very haunting and very creepy about that. With something like this, I think if you were to go that route, it would just look real silly.
It would make it look like he was dumb, not fascinating.
Well, like imagine if he stood up and the camera pulled back to reveal that he was standing in front of a billboard that had a big ass hockey mask on it. And then they're like, look, it's the same.
Yeah, like it's just...
It might be a little broad. I hope they don't do that. And future installments, perhaps.
Do they do that in future installments? I don't remember.
Oh, that's the big moment in Jason Takes Manhattan where he's
God damn it.
He looks up and goes, oh.
It's like, oh.
See, this is where I'm basically watching these for the first time.
And he goes, I've got to get me one of these. He doesn't say that, but he seems to say it.
Not remembering that he's been doing that since 1981.
Right. I will observe that apparently it's a coincidence that the girl who complains about having nightmares is named Nancy.
Like,
that seems like it would be right in line with the, you know, like clever back and forth thing directors do with each other.
Sure. Yeah. Well, but, like having Karloff's grocery.
Yeah. Like it was a Wes Craven and Sam Raimi would always put like a nightmare poster that would get ripped down and like the marquee showing the name of their next movie gets car crashed into it and shit like that.
Oh, speaking of, side note, I found a hour long behind the scenes video on YouTube of the filming of Evil Dead 2. It's shot in 16 and has sound for some of it, at least. I'll post that in the show notes too, because that's fucking fascinating to watch Bruce Campbell in real time where you can see the cameras get picked up by the giant tree hand.
Oh,
like, yeah.
Yeah, cool. It's legit. It's really cool. I'll put
Is that the same one where you see the behind the scenes footage of Ted Raimi just like looking like he's about to have a heart attack in that suit?
I don't know. I have not watched the whole thing yet.
I think that's probably the one. There's this behind it because it was super hot.
Yeah, and he was sweating buckets. You can see it in the
film. And he just looks like he's about to just fucking collapse. And they're like, yeah, we like to torture him. Like, okay, guys, whew, that's an interesting dynamic. But back to this silly thing. I just, you know, like I said, this one, much like 4 is like a complete idea. This one is a completed exercise in what it. When you have somebody with one competent sort of approach and one sort of cohesive idea, and what it looks like when you have competency and a single idea go from start to finish. And it's like, yeah, it makes it fucking fun. And it's sort of like, and it just makes it, you know, just, you know, very, very enjoyable to kind of bop on through. Plus, like I said, the female heroine is just rules. She's great.
For sure. Oh, this is also the movie I did remember one bit. This has that scene where I forget who it is, Megan maybe, kind of like comforts the children and puts them back to bed. And then as she walks out of their cabin, Jason is like a step and a half behind her outside at the window, following her to the front. That is so good. Like, that is such a smart, great, simple shot. And like, that was like kind of like that in the previous one, like the gorgeous shot of like getting thrown out the window. Like, that's another bit that doesn't have to be that good. And it's just shot so smartly and clever.
Oh, it just looks excellent.
So good. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, this one to me feels like just given how I felt about five, that the A team gets back in the building.
Yeah.
We have on camera kills that are bloody, and we have a pace that clips along, and you've got, you know, experimenting with different types of tone, but you don't have just this super broad and loud for long, like extended periods of time. And I appreciate that too.
Yeah.
So ultimately, seriously, this one is probably right up there. It's kind of weird that third trilogy, like, or the second trilogy, 4, 5, and 6, is, I feel like 4 and 6 are about the same, and 5 is way, like, a way dip down. It's like if the Phantom Menace was in the middle of Star Wars instead of Empire Strikes Back. But I would, I'd still say this to me is like a 7.5 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10, Tommy ogling Megan's crotch while they're driving away from Jason for their lives.
That's so weird.
Like, I'm enjoying the view of the denim.
The weird thing is it would be pants. Less creepy if she's wearing a skirt and you can see her underwear. It would make sense then. Like, you know, you get a breakfast.
You are turned on by Levi's. Like,
And like, don't get me wrong, mom jeans do it for some people. Not myself, but some people. The 80s were a weird time to try to get laid. A lot of crimping. Yeah. Jellies, whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to think all the things my sister did in the 80s. This is so weirdly all over the place that it's just too much fun, I think. Like, wherever it kind of, like, does something that's too what the fuck, like our little Statler and Waldorf kids, it's sort of, you're like, yeah, but in this one, yeah, okay. Like, they can be over it. Like, why not? So, for me, I'm going to say this is just a ton of fun. I don't know that it's, I don't know that it quite gives me what I want out of a Friday the 13th movie, but as its own thing, it's pretty fantastic. So I'll make this like a 7.5 for me out of 10. Tommy's Jarvis'd.
Yeah, I think I'll go I was going to go the same route. I think I'll say 7.5. 7.5 out of 10. I don't remember because I want to go back and watch the documentary, like them doing the thing with the outboard motor. Where, like, you know, that's the thing. When she gets the chain around his neck and all that back and forth, and she turns on the outboard motor and just puts it on his like chest and neck, and it's just sort of like you watch that, and you go, wow, that's cool. Then your brain goes, how did they pull that off without getting somebody real injured? Because there's no computer animation, so. And I gotta go back and watch the documentary. Like, do they touch on how they pulled that off exactly? Like,
did they kill a guy?
Yes, yeah. It's just like an actual dude chained up in a lake down there. Like, we'll just leave him there. It'll be like a prop. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And it'll epically foreshadow a prank in northern Minnesota.
Yeah, which I remember that those photos are like that.
So good.
So I'll say 7.5 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10. My brain's gone. I was gonna say some kind of joke about folding your father, but I can't find it. So it's some, insert the joke that makes sense in that spot.
This is the house of my fold father.
Fold folded father. All right, so we'll take just a moment's break and we'll tell you what we're gonna watch next time. Next up, we have three movies that we just kind of wanted to see. They exist in the world. Why not see them? We're waiting for Ready or Not 2, and we don't have that yet. So we're going to watch Send Help, which is in theaters now, and Black Phone 2, which we kind of gave a miss when it came out, but is now on Peacock. If you pee or have a cock, you're allowed to watch it. And Beast of War is on AMC, and I'm sure if you want to find it somewhere else, you can. So Send Help, Send Help, Black Phone 2, and Beast of War. And I have been Josh this entire time, and I'll say...
Amazing. As per usual, we will have a short film. This one is called... Scrolling, there we go. Next Show in 90 Minutes. Okay. which will be on horrorshowhotdog.com. And this one was also on YouTube. And lads, it's animated.
Hey,
why not? Yeah. I'm only not entirely trying to find stop motion animated or puppet stuff lately. Only kind of not entirely. So, yeah, if you want to check that out, that will be on Ye Olde website, where you can also find places to subscribe or send us a message if there's something pertinent you need to tell us. And with all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Don Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And before you know it, we'll be talking to you again. But in the meantime, yeah, take care of yourself. Take care of the people around you. And you know, drink some water. You know, call your family. You know, make sure to have a taco.
I have to share with you that Apple did dumbass updating to its podcast player.
Of course.
And now, instead of showing the title of the podcast your ass is listening to, it shows AI created names for each chapter of the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I've been posting those on the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord every time I get a new episode of theirs. Like, here's what AI thinks you talked about. And at first, they're fucking hilarious. And they're getting more and more accurate and more boring. And someone's like, are they doing that with yours? And it's like, would it surprise anyone to know that I hadn't thought to look?
Well, what I like is I was listening to the most recent one and it said Rambling Jokes as the name of the intro segment.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, that makes me so happy.
It's like chapter one, Rambling Jokes.
I laughed so hard.